by the composer in chapter 3, the liberation from the illusory energy, text number 49.
Suchi-sa-mukha-masina
Rana samyamari
Rana samyamari
Hintam vishoja sanyasa
Hintam vishoja sanyasa
Vittarakshora sahedam
Vittarakshora sahedam
Suchi Rana samyamana haribi by pranayam, breathing exercises and other means. Bindam, the gross body. Visodhya, purifying. Sanyas, by placing transcendental mark of tilak on various places of the body. Vritarakshasaha. In this way, invoking the Lord's protection. Archayat. One should worship. Harim.
Lord Hari.
Translation. After cleansing oneself, purifying the body by pranayam, bhuta, sudhi, and other processes, and marking the body with sacred tilak for protection, one should sit in front of the deity and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. Pranayama is the authorized Vedic process for controlling the air within the body. Similarly, bhuta sudhi is a process for purifying the body. The word suchi means that one should be internally and externally clean. Suchi means one should perform activities only for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If somehow or other one can remember the Supreme Lord constantly by chanting and hearing his holy name, one will come to the pure stage of life as described in this Vedic mantra. Om pavitra pavitra va sarvarasangato piva yasmare tunduri kaksham sadaya vyantara asuchi. From the Garuda Purana. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur has pointed out that although one may mark the body with sacred tilak, perform mudras and chant mantras, if one is thinking within his mind material sense gratification, his worship of Lord Sri Hari is bogus. Therefore, the word suchi here indicates that one should worship the Lord in a favourable frame of mind. Considering the Lord to be sacred and oneself to be an insignificant servant of the Lord. Those who are not favourably inclined towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead do not like to worship the deity in the temple, and they discourage people from going to the temple of the Lord by saying that since the Lord is omnipresent, there is no need to do so. Such envious persons prefer the gymnastic exercises of Hatha Yoga or the Raja Yoga system. But they aspire the Lord himself, such as Vasudeva Sarvamiti and Malikam Sadhanam Puja, indicate that in mature transcendental realization, one understands that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the source of everything and therefore the only worshipable object. Thus the devotees who worship the deity of the Lord according to the Pancharatrika system are not attracted by any yoga process except Bhakti Yoga. Read the translation again. After cleansing oneself, purifying the body by pranayama, mutta suddhi, and other processes, and marking the body with sacred tilak for protection, one should sit in front of the deity and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, coming to the conclusion of this chapter, of course, and we remember the context of this verse. what was the last question asked by King Nimi to put us in that Nidhi context? Yes, Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga. So, what's the general theme of what, who's speaking here? So, what's the general mood of his answer up until sort of previous to this verse?
Well, the verses that I've been given in class 9 is that one should follow the regulative process recommended in the Vedas.
Yep.
Even though it encourages sense gratification, it also encourages regulated sense control, basically sacrifice.
Yes.
To achieve a higher goal of self-purification.
He's been explaining that one must follow the Vedic process, otherwise one becomes sinful, unregulated, degraded like this. One must follow the Vedic process, and although there's some enticement, just like we get some candy coated medicine, there's some enticement for material benefits, the real ultimate goal is that one is being led towards the transcendental realization and transcendental reward. Liberation in the spiritual planets of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, to do that, of course, people follow the Varnashram system and they engage their various activities as Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, what have you, in the service ultimately of Lord Vishnu. It's a slow process, but it does give a result. Slow in the sense that it will take, you know, many lifetimes gradually to come to the point of realizing that one is a spirit soul, and that the enticements, the material enticements given in the Vedas, are not really what we're after. We're after just the transcendental result. Now, here, Abhihotra changes his mood, and after this verse, and I think the previous verse, describing that if one wants to make really rapid progress by actions, by activities, one should actually take to the devotional service of the Lord. So, in that way, he's described that the Vedic processes, mostly dealing with the most material nature, are essential. But if one wants the quickest process, that the same Vedas are giving, the quickest process to the ultimate result, one should then take to devotional service. So, in that mood, he is now describing the process of devotional service, beginning with the worship of the deity of the Lord. And of course, as we remember, we go back that the one of the other Navayugendras has described that to follow the Vedas, whether through Karma Yoga or here through devotional service, one must approach a bona fide spiritual master and learn how to execute one's activities under the direction of the spiritual master. So we see that therefore the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas, they are all supposed to come to the platform of being twice born, or those who actually accept shelter of a spiritual master and are trained in the Vedic process of being a Brahmana, Kshatriya or Vaishya, and they come to a purified state of controlling the mind and the senses and being able to be fixed in their duty. And those as Prabhupada says, the Brahmins guide the Kshatriyas guide the Vaishyas guide the Sudras. Ultimately, the Brahmins are guiding everyone. So, there are many in those previous verses, around about 22-23, like that, that Navayugendra, who was described as one must accept the bona fide spiritual master, he then described several verses, I think about 24-29, something like that, which actually describe things which one should do to serve the spiritual master. And if you actually look in the Sri Gaudiya Kantahara by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, where he sort of picks out the essential verses, those verses actually come under the title of things favourable for bhakti. So in those verses, how to serve a spiritual master, there in sadhana bhakti, they're extremely important as the essential principles of activities which are very favourable to devotional service. Now those, for instance, if we look at verse 24 has a little bit of a connection with this one, because in verse 24 it says that to serve the spiritual master, the disciples should learn cleanliness, austerity, tolerance, silence, study of Vedic knowledge, simplicity, celibacy, non-violence, and equanimity in the face of material dualities such as heat and cold, happiness and distress. And of course, this verse here now, especially cleanliness, is being given a little bit more detail in its practical application in the service of the Lord. So there's a continuation of instruction. And these principles, of course, in verse 24, if you actually look at those that are listed and then compare that with in the Bhagavad Gita 18:42, where it lists the qualities of the Brahmana, you'll find that they're very similar activities that bring one to the mode of goodness. Very similar listed there. Now those, again, whether one is a Brahmana, Kshatriya or Vaishya, who do take instruction from the spiritual master and try to learn the Vedic process, as far as possible, they're all guided towards placing themselves in the highest situation within the material modes. As far as the Brahmins, of course, are able to take that fully and situate themselves fully in the mode of goodness, you know, and to a lesser degree, that the Kshatriyas, they're primarily in the mode of passion, but their secondary quality is goodness, so they can also develop these qualities. And it's also described in the Srimad Bhagavatam that some of these qualities, like cleanliness, and some of those qualities in that list, are actually prescribed for all members of society. So although there's Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras, some of the elements of those lists are recommended for all elements of society, even the sutras. Even sutras are expected to be clean. Of course, they're expected to be truthful, and they're expected to perform some austerity. You know, so many of those lists apply to everyone, but of course the Brahmanas can become you know, the best situated in cleanliness and austerities. But it's not that the sutras aren't asked to become clean and austere like that. So, now, the reason I'm pointing out that, of course, is that, you know, that principle of approaching the spiritual master and developing those qualities, in one sense, is applicable to everyone who wants to situated under the shelter of Vedic injunctions, from the Brahmins to the Sutras. those activities are very conducive to bhakti. So in themselves, they're not necessarily bhakti. So in other words, one may be very, very suchi, but if he doesn't actually engage in the worship of the deity, then he's not necessarily engaged in bhakti. Huh? So, there are described in this verse, there are some yogis who are situated in cleanliness, and some of those principles, and who accept the spiritual master, but they're actually attracted to the impersonal feature. They're not attracted to bhakti or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they actually have some of these qualities, cleanliness, austerity, but they don't apply them, the next step, in worship of the deity or worship of the, you know, the Supreme Lord. And therefore, those activities are conducive to bhakti. When they are actually engaged in bhakti, then they're not different from bhakti in that sense. Because they support bhakti, in that sense they become not different. But in themselves, they, without being engaged in the service of the Lord, some of those qualities are not necessarily bhakti in themselves. But they're very helpful. In the same way that, for instance, one may take a field and plough that field, keep all the weeds down. So the field is, you know, very fertile, free of weed, turned over. So that's very conducive to growing plants. But one, unless one actually plants some seeds in there, one is not really gardening. It's like they're all conducive, but you won't get a garden when you're not really gardening. But the same person who ploughs the field, weeds the garden, and then plants and seeds, then that whole process is gardening. So it becomes non-different, and he gets the result. So you see, these qualities like cleanliness, you know, austerity, they're very conducive to bhakti, and when they are applied in the process of deity worship, in the process of serving the Supreme Lord, they actually become non-different from the process of bhakti. Specifically this verse here is discussing purification and how that is very essential for worship of the deity of the Lord. So, again, let's have a look at the qualities of the Brahmanas, who are actually those who directly engage in the worship of the deity. Of course, anyone who comes to, they may not be directly worshipping the deity, but they may be collecting funds on behalf of deity worship. They may be painting the temple. They may be purchasing food, flowers in the markets. They're all engaged in deity worship. Although they may not, the Brahmins are directly touching and, you know, offering items, but the Brahmins allowed to do that because it is understood that their level of cleanliness and purification is suitable. So even though others may engage in the process of deity worship, if the level of purification and cleanliness is not up to the Brahminical standard, then they may not directly come into contact with the deity. Except of course on certain special occasions when you see that the Supreme Lord sometimes goes for walks or what have you, and then you see the surges of the crowd, and although the Brahmins try to stop and touch on the lotus feet of the Lord, some put their little fingers and touch the lotus feet of the Lord, but generally it's that level of purity and cleanliness has to be there. So in Bhagavad Gita 18.42 it lists the qualities of the Brahmanas: peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom and religiousness. These are the natural qualities by which the Brahmanas work. some of those qualities, in fact, all of them, in fact, are actually listed in this chapter as well, under those things, favourable for service of the spiritual master. Sometimes you see in the Srimad Bhagavatam that there are slight variations in that list of what are the qualities of the Brahmanas. And the Acharyas point out that they're actually commenting on that verse 18.42 of the Bhagavad Gita, that that list is not exhaustive. we shouldn't look at that list and say that that's complete and that there's nothing more that I need to do to be on the, there are slight variations, and they can be understood from the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where it describes that austerities are of three types. There are austerities of the mind, there are austerities of the body, and there are austerity of the speech. So, for instance, here, some of these, purity or cleanliness is considered to be an austerity of the body, and it's considered to be an austerity of the mind. Such things as tolerance, austerity, austerity is a general category, but you say tolerance of course is austerity of the, what would you say, tolerance of the mind, austerity of the mind. So for instance, qualities like a quality which is not listed in that list is ahimsa. So where would we consider, where would we put ahimsa? The austerity of the body. So for instance, non-violence, although it may not be in that list, But it is in that list under the heading of austerity in general. Because as we see from the 17th chapter, that austerity, more expanded, includes austerity of the body, mind and speech. And in the Bhagavad Gita, described that ahimsa is an austerity of the body. So therefore, it's actually in that list. We expand that term austerity. So there are many, many qualities there. Celibacy also. See, celibacy is not necessarily listed in that, is it? No, it's actually not listed there in the qualities of a Brahmana. Yet, it would certainly come under the list of austerity, which is austerity of the body. Right? So, in this way, these are the qualities of the Brahmanas, and by developing those qualities of purification, control of the mind, control of the senses, they become purified from material contamination, and that allows them the opportunity to engage directly in the worship of the deities. So here it is describing that Bhuta Suddhi is a process for purifying the body. The purport here is, Suddhi means that one should be internally and externally clean. Internally clean means free from thoughts of sense gratification. And of course, therefore, one would naturally have to be celibate, because if one's mind is always disturbed by thoughts of sense gratification or sex life, then one cannot maintain internal purity, and therefore, according to that, one is actually not suci to worship the deities. Here, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati points out, of course, that essentially he says, one may mark the body with a sacred tilak, perform mudras and chant mantras. If one is thinking with his mind material sense gratification, his worship of Sri Hari is bogus. Right? So there you see that cleanliness includes many of those. It actually incorporates nearly all of those aspects by which the Brahmins work. It was interesting because one time I actually there was one devotee who was here, and that devotee mentioned to me that many years ago how they were worshipping the deities. While they were worshipping the deities, that they were thinking that they just didn't want to do that, but it was almost like, there were so many things that they wanted to do in the material world, and they were telling me that, while they were worshipping the deities, they're thinking almost like, this is horrible. Because that mind wanted to engage in sense gratification, when they were with the deities, deity worship was like a disturbance, because it's a one is serving the senses of the Lord, and one is thinking that I could be serving my own senses. like this, I'm performing austerities for the Lord, but I could be sleeping, and this and that and the other, and then during the day engaging in that. So ultimately, of course, Krishna can fill that person's desire, and they are no longer able to worship the deities. But it shows you that, if the internal cleanliness is not there, ultimately one will not be able to, maintain worship of the deities, worship of the Supreme Lord. Here it describes Bhuta Suddhi is a process for purifying the body. I was reading in the Pancha Pradeep that devotees of all different levels of advancement apply the process of Bhuta Shuddhi, purification of the body, for deity worship, but also before they chant japa or perform any sort of worship. So in one sense, the essence of Bhuta Shuddhi as or internal cleanliness, it's actually clean, it's internal and external, because it's considered that the elements of the body and mind become purified by the Bhuta Shuddhi process. And by that process, one is then able to approach the Supreme Pure. To, you know, many times we hear, unless one is pure, one cannot approach the Supreme Pure. So, if one's mind is disturbed and one's bodily activities, you know, not suchi, it makes it very difficult to actually, it's impossible literally to perform deity worship, but for many services that we do, it also makes it very, very difficult to engage in those services. In the same way that if we try to light a fire with wet wood, we'll have a lot of difficulty. And we can say, yes, there's some fire there produced, but there will also be a lot of smoke. And that smoke is a big disturbance, and the fire is not very potent. So that is like trying to engage in any sort of devotional service with the mind and the senses in an impure state. But when the mind and the senses are purified, it is like dry wood. So that's the suchi position. And then when one lights a fire, that fire burns very brightly, very strongly, and without the disturbance of smoke. Like that. So this is the Bhuta Shuddhi process. Here it describes that the yogis, they perform pranayama, and as it says in the translation, by pranayama, breathing exercises and other means, which means that, you know, when you perform pranayama, you do so that you can chant Om with a purified mind. That is their Bhuta Shuddhi, in one sense. We chant other Vedic mantras. We chant Om, Klim, different mantras like that in the worship of the deities. So, but our Bhuta Shuddhi process is not the pranayama. We have a different process. Actually, I printed out. The essence of our process is that we remember that we are the eternal servant of the Lord. We become fixed in that conception. When we remember that we're the servant of the Lord, not the servant of the body, and we become really fixed in that consciousness, that's Bhuta Shuddhi, and that purification allows us then to be suchi in order to worship the Lord. And if we worship the Lord in that consciousness, in that suchi consciousness, in that suchi condition, we get the result of deity worship or devotional service or sankirtan or chanting japa or what have you. The same. If one chants the holy name of the Lord, thinking, I am the eternal servant of Krishna, and chants in that mood, please engage in your service, one gets very, very powerful results. If we sit down, before we chant, we meditate. If we sit down and we chant and we're not in that consciousness that I'm the eternal servant of the Lord, and that, you know, I'm the servant of, you know, Laskri, Nanya and what have you like that, we'll chant, but because that Bhuta Shuddhi is not there, we don't get as powerful a result even in chanting or sankirtan or any devotional service. So these are applicable across the board. We have to finish our turn, but I'll just read some aspects here. Here's an interesting quote from the Prajapadipa. It says that asana, you know, worship the deity, is defined as offering articles of worship, upacharas, with mantra, after having performed preliminary purificatory activities, purvakamas, such as Bhuta Shuddhi and nyasas. So that's the definition of asana. worship of the Lord, concomitant with it is we offer worship in a purified state. That is the real definition of archana. Here also in the Pancha Pradipa just describes there are five aspects of worship. The first one is called abhigamana, or approaching the temple. This includes such preliminary functions as bathing, donning fresh cloth, ornamenting the body with tilak and talasi beads, cleaning the temple, removing used articles and cleaning them, and decorating the temple. Generally all activities performed up to and including the early morning mangalarti are considered abhigamana. So this is one of the five aspects of worship. The next one is called upadana, or gathering articles for worship. Now this includes gathering flowers, suitable foodstuffs and salasi leaves, preparing cooked foods, and selecting the proper utensils for the worship. And more broadly, it refers to collecting funds to worship the deity or to help maintain the Lord's temple. So as you see there, that is all part of deity worship. But even that part of the deity worship has to be performed in proper consciousness to get the best results. Yoga is the third point, which means establishing the mind and becoming fixed in one's spiritual identity. This includes cleansing the body of the material conception and assuming a spiritual body fit for service to the Lord, chanting mantras, Bhuta Stuti, in brackets means identifying oneself as a servant of Krishna, and other processes. The worshipper further prepares his consciousness by worshipping the spiritual master and Lord Chaitanya before performing the main worship of Krishna. Jhana, meditation on the form of the Lord, and mantra puja, worship of the Lord within the mind, may also be considered part of yoga. These purificatory procedures performed just before the main worship of the deity are also called Purvanga Kama. So that's three. Right? Approaching the temple, gathering articles, and establishing and becoming fixed in one's spiritual identity. The fourth one is the actual worship of the Lord, called Ija. That's offering the 64 items of worship. Svadhyaya is the fifth, and that's cultivation of devotional service. So Svadhyaya specifically refers to studying Shastra, but it can be understood within the whole context of spiritual cultivation and sadhana, including hearing and chanting the names and glories of the Lord, serving the Vaishnavas, respecting prasad, receiving gifts, serving talasi, and serving the holy dham. Thus studying Shastra becomes complete when one follows the instructions of Shastra and performs these activities. So we see that Svadhyaya, everything we do as a devotee is simultaneously part of deity worship. Even when we chant our rounds, everything we do, chanting around Sankirtana, study the Shastra, all of that can come under Svadhyaya, the culture of Krishna consciousness, the way we associate devotees. It's all can be, if our mind is purified, we won't forget that we're offering this for the pleasure of Sri Sri Radha Vallabha, everything that we do. It's all part of deity worship in a general sense. This here describes that from this analysis one can understand that archana or worship consists of much more than simply offering external articles to the deity of the Lord. Rather, it involves various preparatory and supplementary activities, all of which are necessary to ensure devotional purity and concentration, without which external worship simply becomes a dry ritual. So this is a very important point. When the purity and all the proper supplementary and preparatory activities are there, and purificatory activities are there, the service that we perform we can do with concentration and purity. When we're not in a pure, when we allow our mind to remain unpurified, we cannot fix ourselves on the devotional activities that we're performing for the Lord. We cannot fix ourselves in concentration and purity of purpose. And that reduces the result that we're going to get from our activities in devotional service. One can avoid offensiveness in deity worship by cultivating purity through attentive observance of the rules of Abhidhamma and Yoga. By practicing Svadhyaya, a devotee develops and maintains a proper service attitude. Similarly, by conscientiously applying the details of Upadana to deity worship, he remains enthusiastic to please the Lord in the best possible way. Together with the worship of the deity Ija, anyone engaged in asana on the platform of Vaidhisattva Bhakti must practice these four angas every day. So as you see, here in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Navayogendras are describing different aspects of devotional service. Here, although specifically in relationship to deity worship, but many of these aspects should actually be applied across the board in our devotional service. They're not just incidental details that are not very necessary. And they're not just little rituals that we don't have to worry about. There is an essential method of keeping oneself purified, of keeping one's concentration and purity of thought in the worship, of making sure that we're offering the best to the Lord, the best standard with the best devotion, all these different aspects of devotional service, which is actually mentioned from here to the end of the chapter, are very important in our worship of the deity and in our devotional service in general. And that's how we should take them. Here, it's interesting, again, the Pancha Pradipa that it describes here that if one is established in Krishna consciousness, the elements of the body automatically become purified. In the Bhagavad Gita 18:54, Lord Krishna sums up the characteristics of one who is situated in spiritual consciousness, Brahma Bhuta. So here, the Bhuta Sudhi actually situates us in spiritual consciousness whereby we can perform devotional service. And the essence of that consciousness is described in what verse? You know, it's from the Bhagavad Gita. You got an extra sweet for breakfast.
What
does 18:54 say? 18:54 says that Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochiri Nasamshati Samasare Subhuteshu Mabhaktim Labhate Param. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. So he becomes situated in understanding, I am not this body, I am the spirit soul. He never laments or desires to have anything. Very important. He is equally disposed towards every living entity, and in that state he attains pure devotional service unto me. So that sums up the consciousness that we should be in when performing the worship of the deity. That is achieved through the Bhuta, Sudhi and other processes. I'll read you the prayer that the devotees recite, which is called the Bhuta Sudha, just before they worship the deity. Nice prayers here. Just quickly to sum up this class. I've got them written here. 1 minute. 1 minute. Okay. Here we go. First prayer. I am by nature the eternal servant of Krishna, but by misfortune, due to being inimical toward him from time immemorial, I have been identifying myself with the body and have been continuously wandering in the cycle of birth and death in the material world, suffering the burning threefold miseries. Now, as a result of some unimaginable good fortune, by the mercy of my spiritual master, I know that I am the eternal servant of Krishna, that I am an infinitesimal spiritual being, completely apart from the gross and subtle body. Now by the order of my spiritual master, following in his footsteps, I have attained the good mercy of being able to serve his lotus feet and the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sri Sri Radha. Next prayer. Naham Supro Nachamara Patir and Apivaishuna Sudro Naham Mani Nacha Griha Patir Narvanasto Yatirva Kintu Prajan Nikra Paramananda Paranam Ritabde Gopi Patu Parikamalaya Dasarasanadas. I am not a Brahmana, I am not a Chachi, I am not a Vaishya or a Sudra, nor am I a Brahmachari, a householder, a Vanapras or a Sannyas. I identify myself only as the servant of the servant of the servant of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. He is like an ocean of nectar, and he is the cause of universal transcendental bliss. He is always existing with brilliance. And finally, Divyam Shri Hari Manjira Vajra Tilakam Kantam Sumakam Baksha Shri Hari Nama Vama Subhagam Shri Kanta Lutam Vana Lutam Sukshmam Navam Varam Vimalatam Lutam Vaham Tam Tanam Sayyid Shri Guru Parapadma Nikate Sarat Sukkam Chatmanaha. One should meditate on oneself situated at the feet of one's spiritual master, one's pure body clothed in fine new cloth and decorated with wonderful tilak, one's chest marked with the holy name and anointed with sandalwood pulse, and one's neck bedecked with a garland. So here's a little bit about the process of purification, Buddha Sudhi, so that we can worship the Lord with purity, concentration, and get the maximum results from our devotional service. So any comments or questions, just quickly give them 5 seconds.
In which part of the Diva should we do the Buddha Shuddhi? That is, Buddha Shuddhi?
It's done before.
If
you're going in the deity room in the morning, you should recite those prayers.
You can recite it before you start.
You can, that's right. Yeah.
It's really,
it's all good. Yeah. You can decide before you chant chapter, before you go out and sankirtan. In the morning, when you wake up, off your basis as a spiritual master, have a shower, do the Buddha Sudhi, and then perform devotional service. But if we're going in the deity room, it's essential. We either do it outside or sometimes they do it inside.
You mentioned that even a Shudra should perform he should be clean basically. So it means that all the four regulatory principles are applicable to Shudras according to our
Yes. they will follow as far as possible. The idea is that if we have ideal men, Brahmanas, who actually follow, they're like the moon that illuminates the darkness, and everyone will follow. Everyone, the whole society will follow according to their capacity, and gradually they'll become more and more able to follow those principles. No one is exempt. Any other questions? So I'll go to the